Welcome to the Woodridge Baptist Church Podcast. For more information about what's happening in the life of our church, visit our website at www.woodridge.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Good morning. Good to see you. We're going to be finishing our look at Solomon today. Does that sound good? You know, for the last couple of weeks, three weeks, except for when we've had, Shane and Shane and D-Now and so forth, we've been taking a look at this guy that I think is one of the most interesting people to look at in all of the Bible. And so I invite you to turn to 1 Kings chapter 11, and we'll just focus our study on that today. For 3 weeks, this guy's looked really good. You know, when he's appeared to by God and, he's asked, you can have anything that you want, what do you want? And of course, he asks for wisdom. And then you just see the way that wisdom plays out in his life, you know, the way that it blesses not just him, but the way that the decisions that he makes becomes a blessing to everybody that's around him. And so Solomon, he becomes one of those guys that everybody wants to emulate. He's the most interesting man in the world. And not just because he's rich, even though let's don't kid ourselves, the dude was rich, right? I mean, it's described of him is that he amassed a kingdom that was even greater than his father. And when we think about David amassed a pretty incredible kingdom. So there was something to be said for this guy. However, as we look at him today, the guy that started well doesn't necessarily end well. And that's something that pulls him apart from his dad. Now, we're not looking at David and saying, you should do everything that David did. Don't do that. Don't do that. Because David made some mistakes that were whoppers, weren't they? It wasn't like he was jaywalking. I mean, he was doing some pretty horrible things. But there's something that we'll see at the end of this that really sets him apart from Solomon. But I'll hold on to that for a second. You think about Solomon, and we're thinking about a guy that really had it all. We're thinking about a guy that had it all. And it got me thinking this week about people that at one point they had a name, they had a reputation. People that people would look to and say, boy, they've got a lot going on in life. And then there was a little bit of a change in their life, or there was a big change in their life. And it got me some thinking. I'm a Star Wars person. Anybody like Star Wars out there? There are a few of you out there. That's all right. I've always liked the Star Wars movies. And by the way, The Empire Strikes Back is the best one in the series. And so, people ask that question, which one's the best one out of the nine? And I'm like, it's The Empire Strikes Back. Is there a debate? There's not. It's it. However, I was thinking back to Anakin Skywalker, right? You think about this guy, he's found, and he becomes, when you think about it, he becomes this huge figure in the story. And, they find him and they think his midichlorian levels are off the chart. And that was kind of when Star Wars left me a little bit. Let's do a blood test. Oh my goodness, this guy really has a lot of force in him, right? That wasn't what the force was before, but whatever. He goes off the rails in the way that this thing even tests out. And so he's probably the one. You remember they had been looking for the one that would bring balance to the force, right? Now, of course, for those of you that haven't caught up with Star Wars, then I'm just going to go ahead and do a spoiler for you because it's been out like a long time, okay? But you know what happens with Anakin Skywalker, right? I mean, he becomes, I like to call him Anakin Vader, but he becomes Darth Vader. Now, some of this is because he falls in love with Padme, and of course, Jedi, they're not supposed to be falling in love with the ladies, but he did it, and so there you go, and off the story goes, right? He turns from what is supposed to be the good that's supposed to balance the force and everything, and he shifts to the other team. And that's a good way, I think, of at least getting in your mind's eye of what's happening with Solomon. As a matter of fact, when you think of Anakin Skywalker, Obi-Wan, they get into this pretty incredible fight with each other. At one point, he's the master and the student, and they end up fighting with each other. And at the end of it, what does Obi-Wan say? You were the chosen one. You remember that? It was really dramatic, right? You were the chosen one. It was said you would destroy the Sith, not join them. Well, that's as good as I can get, all right? I tried. I practiced. At least once this week I practiced. At least. But then you think, even before they get this kid into training, there were problems there. Samuel L. Jackson, everybody, who plays Mace Windu, who has the purple lightsaber, a little bit different. He's very concerned about the training up of Anakin, right? He says, you know, something is going to go wrong here. And Obi-Wan says, but you have the prophecy about the one. And then Yoda, of course, is over here going, but perhaps a prophecy misread we have. Be very careful. It's as good as I got today, everybody. I even went backstage to drink some water for that. It's all I got. Yeah. The big concern was, hey, if you, on the one hand, you think this guy is going to restore balance, but what if he's something that you don't think that he is? Well, when you think about Solomon, everything seems to start really well. As I mentioned last week, like the Houston Texans, he just doesn't finish. He just doesn't finish. I'm sorry. It's too soon. I know. You're fine. The good news is the Houston Roughnecks won their first game this weekend, right? There you go. See, we're still winners. It got me thinking of another person that in their career, they started really well, but there were some problems in there. Anybody ever listen to the music of Willie Nelson? Willie Nelson, everybody. Anybody ever go to Luckenbach, Texas with Waylon and Willie and the boys? Because I have. Some of you may not know this, but he's one of the most popular artists in the history of American country music. Now, that you probably did know. Every time he sings, you know it's him, right? I've always kind of thought that, even though I like his stuff, I've always thought that Willie sort of sounds like he has an upper respiratory infection a little bit, but I like his stuff. I don't know if you know this, but Willie Nelson, at one point, he had recorded 68 studio albums, 30 of which achieved gold or platinum status. People, that's crazy. That is crazy. However, did you know that Willie Nelson ran into tax problems? Just a little bit. And at the peak of his troubles, he owed the IRS $32 million. $32 million. What it turns out was that his people hadn't paid his taxes properly. He worked hard, by the way. He even made fun of his own problems. He did a commercial for H&R Block after we found out that he had $32 million of, like, oh, you owe that, right? He even did a commercial for H&R Block. Ultimately, he pays off his debts. He's been recording and touring ever since, even though he's, I think, 173 years old now. Probably, by the way, more popular now than he's ever been, Willie Nelson. But you think about it, you have this guy that just blows up in terms of fame, and then there's just a little bit of a falling out, right? About a $32 million worth of falling out. I give you the example of Anakin Skywalker, and I give you the example of Willie Nelson so that you can kind of see what's going on with Solomon. Let me read this text for you, because I'm going to begin in 1 Kings chapter 11 and start in verse 1, and let's see what happens here. Says, King Solomon loved many foreign women in addition to Pharaoh's daughter. By the way, when I was reading that again this week, I was sitting there going, notice that it points out in addition to Pharaoh's daughter. And so Pharaoh's daughter is sitting there probably going, this is not what I signed up for, right? He loved many foreign women in addition to Pharaoh's daughter, Moabite, Ammonite, Edomite, Sidonian, and Hittite women from the nations about which the Lord had told the Israelites, you must not intermarry with them, and they must not intermarry with you, because they will turn your heart away to follow their gods. To these women, Solomon was deeply attached in love. He had 700 wives, many of whom were princesses, and 300 who were concubines, which back then, think it's like kind of a wife, but kind of not a wife. 300 concubines, and here's the thing, and they turned his heart away. They turned his heart away. When Solomon was old, his wives turned his heart away to follow other gods. He was not wholeheartedly devoted to the Lord his God, as his father David had been. Solomon followed Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and Milcom, the abhorrent idol of the Ammonites. Solomon did what was evil in the Lord's sight, and unlike his father David, he did not remain loyal to the Lord. Now, at that time, Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the abhorrent idol of Moab, and for Milcom, the abhorrent idol of the Ammonites, on a hill across from Jerusalem. He did the same for all of his foreign wives who were burning incense and offering sacrifices to their gods. And the Lord was angry with Solomon because his heart had turned away from the Lord, the God of Israel, who appeared to him twice. He had commanded him about this so that he would not follow other gods, but Solomon did not do what the Lord commanded. And then the Lord said to Solomon, since you have done this, you didn't keep my covenant and my statutes, which I commanded you, I will tear the kingdom away from you and give it to your servant. However, I will not do it during your lifetime for the sake of your father David. I will tear it out of your son's hand. Yet I will not tear the entire kingdom away from him. I will give one tribe to your son for the sake of my servant David and for the sake of Jerusalem that I chose. And then you see it finished in verse 14 for what we're talking about today. And so the Lord raised up Hadad the Edomite. These, by the way, were people that, you know, when you think of a consistent enemy of Israel, it's the Edomites. The Lord raised up Hadad the Edomite as an enemy against Solomon. He was of the royal family in Edom. Solomon, my friends, had it all. He had it all. He was successful. He was wise. He has people like the Queen of Sheba having to come check him out because the rumors about him were so unbelievable. And of course, you remember from her, she says, it far surpassed any of the rumors that were even said about you. You absolutely blow me away. Solomon is a temple builder. Solomon is also a thousand wives guy. He's a little bit of a mixed bag in there, right? Thousand wives guy. Now, some of this related to the marriages here, just so you know, was all about politics. It was all about politics. One Old Testament scholar said most of the marriages were to secure peace between Israel and other countries. And did you notice in verse 3, it says that many of the women that he married were princesses. Did you catch that? I find that pretty interesting, part of which because it started making me think of Disney immediately, right? So you have Solomon, and of course these women are walking around, and I can't help but think they start singing, and that's when he says, we got to start building them a house. We got to get them out of here, right? You have many of them are princesses, and the reason that he even marries up with them is not because he loves them really. It's because it was all for political gain. These women were a useful tool to him. And here's the catch. Did you see it? God had told him all along, don't do this. And the reason is because marriage is a covenant between two people. It is not a strategy for political gain. And God was telling him all along, you don't play with what I have created. And Solomon did. And so here's what happens. You see it. Solomon gets attached to these women. He gets attached to them. And what you saw in chapter 11 was, and they turned his heart away from the Lord. So in 1 Kings chapter 3, here's your warning. Be careful who you hang out with. They're going to turn your heart. In 1 Kings chapter 11, and many women turn the heart of Solomon. He builds them their own palaces. He builds them their own places to worship, even though they're worshiping gods that despise the God he believes in. Let's build them a place so that they can do this. Question. With just this part in mind at the beginning, I want to ask you this question. What are you attached to that is turning your heart away from God? What are you attached to that is turning your heart away from God? We figured it out for this guy. We know. Can we be honest with ourselves for a second, though? We're not really any different from him, are we? We're really not. I mean, maybe you're sitting out there going, well, it's not women. Well, okay, that's fine. But it's probably something. And we've so attached ourselves to it that it's like it takes us away. And the way that he got here, because there are some things to remember. How did Solomon get to the place where he's walking lock and step? Like 1 Kings 3 says, he's walking lock and step with the Lord to get to the place of what we were reading this morning. And I want to give you some insights on that today. I think in seeing it from him, it helps it becoming us. We don't have to do this. And so we learn from the past. Here's the first thing. How did Solomon get here? Here's number one. He stopped listening to God. He stopped listening. Again, it's one thing to say that you have found the source of wisdom. God was the source of wisdom. It's another thing to stay tapped into the source of wisdom. Solomon had walked away. I want you to notice three things that Scripture talks about here. One, obviously, he multiplies wives, even though he was told not to. Even in Deuteronomy 17:17, he must not take many wives or his heart will be led astray. He's already done that. Second, did you notice in his story, he multiplies gold and silver. And on the face of it, that doesn't sound bad, does it? It doesn't sound bad, except in 1 Kings 10:14, when it says the weight of the gold that Solomon received yearly, by the way, was 666 talents. And you go, well, how much would that be? Well, in terms of pure weight, he's getting about 25 tons of gold and silver every single year. And this does not include the revenues from the merchants and the traders, from all of the Arabian kings and the governors of the territory. He's just stockpiling this stuff. He's got Fort Knox out there somewhere, and he's just pouring it in. And then it says that he multiplied horses. For us, that'd probably be cars, but you know, he multiplies horses. And again, from Deuteronomy 17, you go, why does that matter? I mean, who cares? And here's why. It's because when it says that he multiplied horses, this is a Jewish expression for amassing a large army. And when in taking the kingship away from Adonijah, you remember he wasn't even supposed to be the guy. He had brothers that were older than him that should have been the first in line to become the king, but it didn't happen. It was appointed to him. So in taking the kingship away from Adonijah, Solomon had acquired enemies from the military commanders who had supported Adonijah. And they camped up in the north, and it said they would often harass the people of Israel. And maybe for this reason, we're not sure, but more likely for pride, Solomon builds up this massive army that includes 12,000 horsemen, 1,400 charioteers. This despite, here's the thing, he never goes to war. He just keeps building it up. The problem with the large army is that not only was it expensive, but it required a draft to conscript all of those people into service. And as has been pointed out, this caused resentment among a number of them, and the absence of large numbers of men from their families and from their work and from their home. And all why? Because Solomon wanted to build something up. It wasn't because it was needed. It was because it built up the wrong thing. It built up his pride. Solomon, and this was the first thing, he stopped listening. You don't need this stuff. Remember when he asked for wisdom? He could have asked for money. He could have asked for, but he doesn't. He asked for wisdom. And the immediate result was what? Not only did God give him wisdom, he gave him these other things. It was already there. And here's what Solomon is basically saying. I see what you've given me. It's not enough. It just isn't enough. And I have a better idea. I have a better idea. So he stops listening to God. And God, by the way, had given him a warning. You pursue these things, and they're going to pull you away from me. He pursued them, and what was the result? Pulled him away from God. So he stops listening. Here's the second thing that we see from Solomon. Solomon is brought down by the relationships that he kept. Solomon is brought down by the relationships that he kept. One of the keys to staying in touch with God are the people that you surround yourself with. One of the keys, please hear me, one of the keys to staying in touch with God is the people that you surround yourself with. It is instrumental. In Proverbs 13:20, it says, walk with the wise and become wise, associate with fools and get in trouble. There's an adage that you will become, students pay attention because you're still young, right? You will become the average of the five people that you most closely associate yourself with. That's an adage. You will become the average of the five people that you most closely associate yourself with. And so here's what's going to happen. They're going to seriously be thinking about the sermon this afternoon. And then they're going to call a friend and say, I was thinking about the sermon today, and I have to make some cuts. I have to make some cuts, and you didn't make it. All right, seriously, walk with the wise and become wise. Associate with fools and get in trouble. Why? Because fools cause trouble. That's why. That's why. You associate with them, that means that you're walking life with them. You walk life with them, you walk in the decisions that they make. You walk in the decisions that they make, you live in the consequences of the decisions that they make. Proverbs 13:20, walk with the wise, you become what, everybody? Wise. It pours into you. There's an old African proverb that says this, when you run alone, you run fast. But when you run together, you run far. Isn't that beautiful? When you run alone, you run fast, but when you run together, you run far. Some years ago, Wendy and I did this marriage course, and one of the things, the analogies that it gives is in a marriage, you always have to see yourself as running a three-legged race. How many of you have ever run the three-legged race? right? So basically, you take your inside leg and you tie your legs together, right? And so your outside legs are basically free. Your inside legs, you have to work as a team. That's the picture of the three-legged race. So you can run fast alone, but you run far together. Every single one of us needs somebody that is pouring wisdom into our lives. I've shared this with students before. There were two professors at NC State that I got to learn a lot from. And one of the things that they had done studies, and they said, what was the key to a young person's success? And the number one thing that was the most important to a young person's success, it didn't really have so much to do with race or socioeconomic status as much as it did, was there someone, a mentor that came alongside them that said that they were valuable and showed them how to do life? That was the key. They could have been in a rich family, they could have been a poor family, a middle class family, but did they have somebody that saw them as valuable, worthy of love, worthy of investment, and showed them how to do life? That was the biggest indicator of a person's future success. Question, how important is it who you surround yourself with? Make sense? To walk with the wise means forward movement. You're walking with them. In other words, walking means you're going from point A to point B. You're not moving backwards. You're not sitting still. You're taking steps forward to a better destination. That is walking. And so this is an important point. There's probably, please pay attention for those of you that are married, there is probably no more important friend that you can have than your spouse. There is no more important friend that you can have than, how about the single people, please listen to that. There is no more important friend than you can have than your spouse. Are you in your marriage intentionally blessing your spouse? Let me give you some examples. Are you consistently praying for your spouse? Are you consistently speaking words of encouragement to your spouse? Are you constantly lifting up your spouse? There's no more important person or friend that you can have than your spouse. One of the biggest influences, and I knew this well before I ever got married, well before I ever knew who Wendy Cavender even was, well before that time, one of the biggest influences on the children that I would one day have would be her. I knew it. It would be her. Now, why do I bring all that up? It's because Proverbs 13:20, that's why. Who do you surround yourself with? Who do you surround yourself with in your marriage? Now, this isn't the point where you sit there and go, gosh, Jeremy, that's a good point. I'm going to have to think about this afternoon, and at that point, I think I'm just going to have to let him go. Right? That is not what I'm saying right now. Not. On the one hand, some of you are single. I would encourage you seriously to think about what I'm talking about. Seriously think about what I'm talking about, because this person is supposed to do life with you. You're joined on the inner leg. Be careful who you join yourself with. For others of you, you need to take a step back and to reclaim the beautiful part of what's found in Proverbs 13:20, that you can be a blessing to each other, you can push each other on to good works, and you can push each other on to love the Lord well. But notice with Solomon, he surrounded himself with the wrong people, and as a result, he fell. But, and this is third, his fall was not in one fell swoop. It wasn't in one fell swoop. It was gradual. Did you notice that? It was gradual. In 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 1, it's really interesting. Before Solomon even asked for wisdom, Solomon marries the Pharaoh's daughter. Before he even asked for wisdom, he marries the Pharaoh's daughter. So here's the bad. The bad is Solomon was already compromising. He was already compromising. It's like a flower. You plant a seed, and only after time do you see what blooms. Sometimes we think, you know what? This hasn't hurt me yet, and so I'm good. Have you ever felt that way about yourself spiritually? Well, this hasn't hurt me. I've put the seed in the ground with the choice I've made. I just haven't necessarily seen what's coming up out of the ground with the choice that I've made. And we sit there for a while, and we go, I'm good. Or maybe even this, I got away with it, right? I avoided a catastrophe. Solomon was already compromising, again, like a flower. You plant the seed, only after time do you see what blooms. Sometimes we think, because we haven't been hurt, you're good. But if we're not careful, here's how we think. most of my life is on track, so things are pretty good. Did you catch that? Sometimes what we think is, most of my life is on track, and so I'm pretty good. The thing we need to remember is one key verse in 1 Kings chapter 11, which said this, "And Solomon didn't follow God with his whole heart." We look at the good, and we say, we're good. C.S. Lewis, by the way. You know I like C.S. Lewis. C.S. Lewis said, when you go to the doctor, you show him the bit of you that is wrong, say a broken arm. It would be a mere waste of time to keep on explaining that your legs and your eyes and your throat are all right. His problem was he did not love the Lord with his whole heart. He had given part of himself to the Lord. And what that means, number four, is he wasn't wholeheartedly committed. You saw that in verse 4. Early in his kingdom, he does pretty well. At the beginning of his reign, he is said to have, and I quote, 1 Kings 3:3, "loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of David his father." Although even at this early point in Solomon's kingship, there are some worrying signs. Again, he marries the daughter of Pharaoh, but he also performs sacrifices and offerings at the high places, and it wasn't his place to do that. Wasn't his place. But on the positive side, Solomon prays for wisdom, expresses genuine humility in doing so. Solomon, I think, is a lot like me. Spiritually speaking, it's fits and starts. It's fits and starts. It's like two steps forward, probably one step to the right, then another step back. You feel that way spiritually at times? Because Solomon certainly did. And here's the consequences. Here's the consequences. As God told him, the legacy of his turning away was a divided kingdom. I'm taking this away from you. In the reign of Rehoboam, which was Solomon's son, the kingdom of Israel divided from Judah as a result of Solomon's increasingly oppressive policies. He was taxing people. He was pulling people out of their homes to amass his army and so forth. And when Rehoboam followed his father's policies, he's like, I'm going to take what dad did and I'm going to kick it up a notch. And when he did it, you had a split. 10 tribes in the north had had enough. They divided from Judah. The great unified kingdom of David, Solomon's father, ended less than 200 years. And later, Judah, they were invaded and they were destroyed. And you go, why? And the answer was, it's because they were weak. All of these choices led not just to Solomon's fall, but to the fall of everybody else around him. There's a Jewish wisdom literature book called Sirach. And in the book of Sirach, it says, describing Solomon, how wise you were when you were young, overflowing with instruction like the Nile in flood. Your understanding covered the whole earth and like a sea filled it with knowledge. Your fame reached distant coasts and you were beloved for your peaceful reign. But you abandoned yourself to women, gave them dominion over your body, brought a stain upon your glory, shame upon your marriage bed, wrath upon your descendants, and groaning on your deathbed. And thus, two governments came into being. By the way, just like 1 Kings 11 said was going to happen, God said, I'm going to break you apart. But in spite of that, he started so well, didn't he? He started so well. You just got to finish well. It's not just enough to know the source of wisdom. We have to stay tapped in to the source of wisdom. It's not just to know the source of blessing. We stay tapped into the source of blessing. And Solomon, who had everything that everybody could ever ask or imagine for, became the kind of guy that nobody would want to be. Nobody would want to be him by the end. It's strange. A man that was incredibly rich, had a lot of women, becomes the man that you pity. That sounds strange. C.S. Lewis said it like this, because we don't always feel that we're to be pitied. In fact, a lot of times we don't. But C.S. Lewis said, a person can be an object of pity when he's not feeling miserable. Imagine yourself looking down from a height on two crowded passenger trains that are traveling towards one another along the same line at 60 miles an hour. You see that in 40 seconds there's going to be a head-on collision. The passengers are an object of pity, though they do not feel miserable themselves. My guess is, as Solomon was pursuing all of these things, my guess is he didn't necessarily say, you know what, I'm an object of pity right now. My guess is he didn't say, you know what, I'm an object in need of mercy right now. Solomon was doing his thing. But I think you see what C.S. Lewis is saying. It's not really about how he felt. Much like the people on the train, the passengers are an object of pity, even though they're not feeling miserable. And it's the same for those, and this is the point of the whole study of Solomon, it's the same for those that don't follow God. We may not feel like we're an object of pity, but we're a train crash ready to happen. There's a lot to learn from this guy. But can I give you the good? Because there's good threaded throughout the whole thing. What is said of Solomon, he gives a reflection on his life. He's an old man. Imagine him walking out on his palace, right? Looking out and saying, I've amassed a massive kingdom. But looking at it and saying, and this is empty. This is empty. Which is how he felt. This was empty. This was a pursuit really of nothing. He got it, but he got nothing. But one of the things in those moments of reflection, Solomon looks back and what he says is yet in spite of all of this, God's wisdom stayed with me and God stayed with me. In spite of myself, God stayed with me. God still interacts with him. God still offered him blessings, not because of him, but in spite of him. I want to tell you this morning. It's been no different for me. It has been no different for me. And what I would hope is that we would have the same story as Solomon, at least in this sense, is that we would have this connection to somebody before that is greater and shows us a better way. You know, David, the line of David leads to Jesus, who is truer and better than anything that David ever was. And in Jesus, we see what we were created for in life. The chief end of man is to know God and to enjoy him forever. And so I go back to something that I asked at the beginning of this whole talk as I was looking at Solomon, and it was this. What are you attached to that is keeping you from God? Just like Solomon, what is it?
We hope you have enjoyed the podcast. For more information about our church, visit www.woodridge.org.